Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
If you're going to be around other people and not just on a run, or carry that mask with you and know when you have to put it on, you know, versus being able to have it off if you are, you know, trying to get, some exercise. I think it's all of those, you know, all of those just general human decency type things that if you keep it in mind and you're kind to each other, we can do, a lot and return, to a closer version of normal. So I applaud people for really covering both sides of it. And what I mean by that is getting out and trying to do more, but doing it in the safest way you absolutely possibly can.
And I'm going to just a quick caution, stop shaming people. Okay, just stop shaming people. It was so funny.
I'm with you there.
I know. I've been on this, I've been biking more and more. There's one particular park I happen to go past early on in this process. I remember one time I go by the park, there was one gentleman with his dog, and then there were two young women kicking a soccer ball back and forth. So everyone keeping a distance, but three people in the entire park. Yesterday, there weren't very many parking spaces open in that park. You had people all over the park, kids running around, people kicking soccer balls, people with their dogs out running around. And again, when you think about it, honestly, we never, at least I've never really been around. Like when you'd be out in the open, we usually always kept some semblance of social distance. It's not like we're always packed on a BART train, for crying out loud. But when you're in the park, you're usually kind of away from each other. It was neat to see as many people as were out yesterday having fun, throwing a ball back and forth, maybe reading a book, whatever it was. It was a beautiful day out where I live. And it was interesting, though, as this continues to move along, JD, more and more people getting brave, more and more people doing it the right way. And I agree with you. I think that's a good thing for all of us to have happen. All right, let's move it along here on Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. The Last Dance. Did you find yourself wrapped up in The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan 10-part documentary that we just finished seeing on ESPN? By the way, it's not happening this Sunday. For 5 weeks, we had a Sunday to look forward to, JD. Nothing to look forward to this Sunday, by the way.
Yeah, there's a part of me that thinks that was strategically planned in an attempt to, give the people something, but also maybe by this weekend, that first weekend, maybe there would be some news. You know what I mean? Like, I think maybe the NBA was thinking, and even ESPN were probably thinking, hey, we'll get through these 5 weeks, get everybody, give everybody something to watch, and then maybe hopefully by the end of that, maybe that next week there'll be some news about a possible return. That's sort of my don't be surprised if. I know that's
the website that you and I have. You and I've got a website,
exactly.
Don't be surprised if, don't be surprised if.com.
Don't be surprised if maybe you see a little bit of news in that window.
I like
weekend.
That tease. That's a good tease.
But no, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved everything about it. As somebody that was, I was a kid when the Bulls, 6-8 started. I mean, I was 10 years old at that point, and it ran all the way through the summer before my senior year of high school. So I was, you know, just got done with my junior year. So it took me back to a different place to where I was, you know, right about when we met, I think was shortly thereafter.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, it took me back to a place where it was, you know, where you were all about that pure fandom. You know, as you start to work in the business, a little bit of that, you know, you understand the perspective of being a fan and everything. But as you get farther along in the business, you know, that goes away because it kind of has to a little bit if you're going to be a professional and have jobs and be around teams and cover them in an appropriate way. You got to lose a little bit of that sheer fandom. Mm-hmm. But to be able to go back, and I wasn't the biggest Bulls fan. I know you're from Chicago, but I wasn't the biggest Bulls fan. But to just go back and be able to relive some of the rivalry games and the stories behind it and the legend of Jordan, I thought it was great. And it just took me back to just a lot of fond memories from being a kid and being in high school and growing up and really why you love sports today. So I just thought it was tremendous. It was well done, even if it was more of an autobiography than a true documentary. I know we've seen a little bit of, you know, you talk about shaming, like, well, it's not a true documentary.
Yeah, I know.
I don't really care if it's a true documentary. It's entertaining as hell.
Yeah. And you know what? That's what it's supposed to be. And whether you agree with the way history was told or not, it was a version of history told through the eyes of Michael Jordan. And we all get to tell our own histories if we want. We could choose to listen to them or not. There are some stories they talked about in this that I had heard different versions of. One was the gambling scenario with Michael Jordan and why he left the league for a year and a half and why he played baseball. You know, and people are coming out now saying, well, if he'd have stayed doing that, he'd have made it to the major leagues. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I had heard a different version of that story. The Isaiah Thomas not making the dream team story. I think we've all heard a differing version of why it was Isaiah didn't make it. And we've heard some other guys also say, hey, listen, if you're the face of the Bad Boys, Michael Jordan wasn't your only enemy. There were a lot of guys on that dream team who necessarily didn't need to have Isaiah, you know, with a smiling face around the team, that maybe he had a few more problems with guys around the National Basketball Association than we were led to believe. But I found some of the backstories interesting. Did you find that you had a different view of Michael Jordan through watching this, or do you think of him the same way? Did you like him less, like him more? Like, eventually this is a referendum somewhat on Michael Jordan. We know he's the greatest NBA star of his generation and maybe the greatest sports star on the planet. But did you find your view of him changing at all throughout the 10 episodes?
I appreciated how unapologetic he was for the way that he was back in the day. You know, because you could tell he was a little worried, and he even said as much about how he was going to be portrayed as far as, you know, the competitive spirit and maybe not nice to his teammates and maybe just come off as a tyrant and a micromanager and just a guy that just, you know, drove his teammates to the brink of, you know, wondering if they even wanted to play with him on a day in, day out basis. You could see the concern, but he also, well, you can tell it did affect him, you know, all these years later. I don't really feel like he was apologetic for it. And it was just very real and raw, I thought, a lot of the emotion, you know, that stemmed from that. So I thought that was cool. I found myself, you know, leaving it thinking Michael Jordan is exactly who I thought he was in terms of just the ultimate addicted to competition, alpha, gonna get it done at all costs, greatest of all time. Like you know, the whole notion of, well, is it Michael or is it LeBron? Like, the whole notion, like, that was never even a conversation. Like who was having that conversation? Like, you've yeah. seen that come out a lot lately. Like, oh, well, the conversation's been put to bed now, and I don't want to hear anybody talk. It was never a conversation, and I think this just solidifies the fact that it was never a conversation and shouldn't be a conversation. And that's not taking anything away from LeBron James. It's just different. Those guys are just on different levels.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I know Horace Grant was pretty critical of what came out of the documentary, the former teammate. He was there for the first three championships. You mentioned how I'm from Chicago. I am from Chicago. When I was a kid, I was a Bulls fan. But by then, I had done Golden State Warrior games backing up for guys.
Yeah.
I was working
and
for the 70s.
And you worked for the Rockets, right?
Exactly. So I was with the Sixers during the early Bulls championships. Then I actually worked in Chicago for the 2 years that they didn't win championships. And then the 3 years they won the other one, I was actually transitioning to Houston at that point. So that was my kind of NBA arc. And news flash, when you work for an NBA team, you kind of root your paycheck. So I wasn't doing Sixer games rooting for the Bulls, quite frankly. You know, it was one of those deals. So I wasn't a sure. Bulls fan during that time, but I certainly was awed by what the Bulls were doing. And I just remember one time, you know, I'm doing Sixer games, and I get to the arena early, very early, and the arena lights are off. This is at the old Spectrum, and I'm setting up my stuff because I know, it's the Bulls in town. This is going to be a big game, really exciting, and I'm setting up all my, you know, my boards and everything ready for the game. And down on the floor, you can hear a ball bouncing, and you see there is a ball boy, and there is one athlete on the floor. And that athlete, with no one else in the Spectrum, was Michael Jeffrey Jordan, and he's working on his game. It was unbelievable to me that I'm sitting here in an arena putting my stuff together, and there's one other person, and that other person is Michael Jordan. It just resonated with, wow, the greatest in the game is working on his game, and he's got a game to play in 3 hours from now. That shows you what it takes to be great. It's just not the God's gift. It's the God's gift and what you do with it. That was just an amazing moment for me as a broadcaster.
Yeah, no question. I mean that is pretty special. And again, that's the kind of thing that you remember, you know, to this day. Was there anything you didn't like about the show?
Yeah.
What didn't you like?
Well, I didn't like the fact that they instantly tried to make Jerry Krause the evil doer. And I don't know if anyone has followed this, but Jerry Krause, who has since passed away, was writing a book, a biography. I guess you call that an autobiography, right? He was doing his own bit. But he was writing a book about that same era. He passed away. His wife has the transcript and has passed it along to a guy who's been covering the Bulls for 20 years. And as each episode would come out, they would reveal a little bit more about this book that Jerry Krause had been writing. And, you know, he had a chance to get his say somewhat, but I didn't like the fact that they made Jerry Krause to be the bad guy. Remember, Jerry Krause is the general manager. He's not the owner. Jerry Reinsdorf's the owner. And, you know, just because a guy you hired has a suggestion to you doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to, you know, hey, if I'm the owner, I want to say in what's going on. Truth be told, Jerry Reinsdorf made more money in the 3 years after the sixth championship than he did in those 3 years that they won the second three-peat. Because in the second three-peat, they were paying Jordan $33 million a year on all of his one-year deals. What Reinsdorf did was he signed all of his sponsors and his season ticket holders to three-year deals, saying, I won't change your pricing if you sign a three-year deal. They all signed the deal, and then Jordan was gone. And then Pippen got traded. And then the worm was done. And they turned the whole franchise over, so fans are paying top dollar to see a bottom ticket team. I found the writing of Jerry Krause's history bad. I wish some guys would have said, you know what, he did put together a team that was the greatest team of its era and arguably one of the great teams of all time. So I thought that was kind of distasteful, and I thought that maybe Krause took too much of the brunt of the heat. I think Reinsdorf got away with a little bit too much. He came off too clean. He could have said, listen. He could have said, hey, you know what, Scotty? You did sign a rotten deal earlier. You're worth more. Let's make it square. He didn't. Now, I'm not saying I'm for renegotiating deals when a guy signs his contract. But, JD, I found that to be a little bit off, that they really stepped on a guy who couldn't have a say And I found that to be a little bit distasteful. I wish Jordan would have said, you know what? I didn't necessarily like the guy, but he did put the best team. He put the best guys around me to make me what I am today.
Yeah. What did you think of why do you think it was portrayed that way as far as Jerry Reinsdorf? Like, why do you think he got off as too clean and it was pushed toward Krause?
I think it was too easy.
Because Krause had passed away?
Yeah. Well, I think it's because Krause is an easy target. He was a target at the time when it was going, when they were going through this. And I think when you don't have someone there to tell their side of the story, it is a little easier to kick that person. And I don't know if, and again, I wasn't in on the interviews, but I don't know what questions were asked to Jerry Reinsdorf, and I don't know what Michael Jordan allowed to be showed. Right? I mean, there is a storyline that goes, the league had all of this evidence on Michael Jordan for his gambling. And that's why they agreed to step away. And when you listen to David Stern in that segment, the late, great David Stern, who was a brilliant commissioner, I didn't agree with everything he did, but he was a brilliant commissioner. When you hear his answer, he says, there's no truth that I suspended Michael Jordan. There is no truth that he suspended. Nobody thinks he suspended Michael Jordan. Or you can use that word.
Retired.
You know, exactly. There's different phraseology. David Stern is brilliant at using the language. He answered the question the way the words were used, not the intent of what was meant. And there are a number of examples of that. And I think that he is right. He didn't suspend Michael Jordan. But the storyline I heard is the league put a huge file on a desk and they said, Michael, we have all this evidence and this is just part of it, of what you've been doing. And it might have been smart for everyone to move away. Now, I understand in the documentary, there was a lot going on in Michael Jordan's life, right? A lot going on with his father. He was exhausted from what was happening. I totally buy that as part of it as well. But I do think the gambling was a little bit larger when it was David Aldridge who said, listen, here's the backstory of why Jordan didn't go visit the president. He's on the golf course getting his butt kicked by, I forget the guy's name now. Why can't I think of the guy's name who he owed all the money to? And that's a big reason. That's a big issue right there that Jordan was beholden to a lot of guys. And you start losing money in gambling and you're the best player on the floor, you can't have that association, JD. You can't have that association for a league that wants to be on the up and up.
What did you think about Scottie Pippen and the way he was portrayed? Because I think he's got a right to maybe be a little bit upset. And I know reportedly, you know, he's in his feelings a little bit about,
he is,
you know, this particular situation. But I don't know. I mean, I sort of look at it like, hey, look, Scottie wasn't perfect. I don't think Michael was portrayed as perfect throughout this thing, although probably a better version of himself than if it had been a completely, you know, untweaked, you know, full-blown documentary. MJ could have looked a little bit worse. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, Scottie Pippen didn't look the best all of the time, but he also was clearly, you know, the guy that helped, you know, win six championships alongside Mike and, you know, had the Bulls be a pretty good team that one full year that Jordan wasn't around and came up big in the final game in 98, even playing with the bad back. I mean, to me, it was Scottie isn't perfect, but boy, we don't do any of this without Scottie.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that there was also a huge focus, and I was working in Chicago at the time, that the focus of him not going on the floor in that playoff game where Tony Kukoc gets the last shot, hits it, and wins, that was such an amplified story. How could it not be?
That was a national story too. I mean, I remember that being talked about in Northern California on the shows.
Yeah, yeah, that was. I mean, come on, the best player on the team, and that's what Pippen was at the time. Scottie Pippen was the Michael Jordan of that two-year period. And he says, I'm not going to step on the floor because you want me to be the trigger man on the inbounds and not give me the last shot? Well, Kukoc goes and saves his bacon and hits the shot. But I'm not sure that being brought up again helped Pippen, as you say, being in his feelings. For all the great stuff they showed about Scottie Pippen, I think just bringing that fact up again, that he didn't walk out on the floor, that I think that that overshadowed all of the greatness that he portrayed in this. Scottie Pippen was one of the 50 best players in the first 50 years of the NBA. There's no question about it. He was spectacular. All right? And I go down swinging with this. There's no question in my mind that era Bulls team, whether you want the first three or the second three, beats this version of the Warriors. Not this bad season, but the really great Warriors teams. The 73-win team, whatever team you want to throw at them. Because Pippen could lock up anybody he wanted to, and Jordan could lock up anybody he wanted to. But for Pippen to be unhappy about his portrayal, to me it can only be that they pointed out how he didn't walk out onto the floor. How he just opted not to be the guy to come in, which you're right. That's a national story. It has to be a national story. And I do think, though, JD, that will scar him forevermore as to how we look at him as a player, because isn't he already looked at as, oh, he's Jordan's caddy? Isn't that how we look at Scottie Pippen?
Yes, but also maybe the most elite caddy of all time.
I mean, totally agree.
I think Scottie Pippen is viewed as the best number two in the history of sports, maybe. Maybe Jerry Rice would be the other one.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree that it should be, but unfortunately, there's not a lot of nuance to fans when we talk about the greatness of people. And the greatness was Michael Jordan. And then there was the Jordan. They called them the Jordanaires, didn't they? Or didn't Jordan say? My supporting cast. He called them my supporting cast. Well, you know, it might have been true, but you don't want your leader telling you you're just the supporting cast. And maybe that's why Pippen's all tweaked about a lot of this stuff. And he might be unhappy. He might be openly unhappy. Horace Grant seemed to be openly unhappy about the retelling of history. But the winner gets to tell history. That's the way the game is played. And Jordan had the ultimate telling of this history. Any way you slice it, people seem to be pretty ingrained in it, right? Over 5 million people each and every weekend sitting down to watch that thing. And then when you start to put the numbers on from the Netflix, I believe it's on Netflix the next day. Is that the way they would do it? It was on ESPN, but then it was on Netflix the next day. Isn't that how they did it?
Yeah. So if that's how you consume your stuff, you can. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think the numbers were pretty darn astronomical. It was pretty interesting during that time. You know what? It also spoke to me. How great those teams were. I preferred the early shows of The Last Dance as it kept moving along the way. I found myself walking away from the TV more and more. Like I would set the TV up, I'd be geared up, I'd watch it. The first two, I'm there for each and every one of them. The next two, I'm there for the third, the fourth one. I'm starting to tap out a little bit. I might have something to do. You know, I think it was the fourth weekend. I was in and out of the show throughout. I didn't find myself just locked in the entire way. Now, you might have been a guy who was locked in a little bit more in the later years, and I was a little bit more locked in on the earlier. Did you find yourself that you were more interested in one time versus another time?
I found myself loving anything that pertained to individual games or series, and honestly, for me, it was the whole time. I found myself I loved all of it from the
That's
stuff
good.
About the first championship in 91 to when they beat Phoenix to the year that Jordan didn't play in 94 to you know, the back end of it. I loved all of the backstories about, you know, the Utah series and the series against Indiana and when they played
Great
the
stuff.
Knicks this year. I thought all of that stuff, and that was the stuff that I was looking forward to the most. But and that's kind of what I was getting at earlier as far as sort of just being taken back. Like, I remember watching all those games. I mean, I'm blessed. I mean, many people don't have it, but I'm blessed with having a pretty good memory, you know.
Yeah, you do.
So I can remember, like, I remember watching, you know, the Bulls-Lakers finals in 91. I remember watching that. I was 10 years old. I remember watching it. And, I remember John Paxson going off. And I remember mm-hmm. John Paxson, you know, making the game-winning shot in 93 and that game six, you know, when the Bulls won that championship. and then Jordan retired. So it was fun to kind of go back to that place for me as a kid, because it was a time where you fell in love with, for me, a time I fell in love with sports. Really, I mean, I loved basketball back then. I loved baseball back then, and so it was fun to kind of go back and, as an adult, get some of the backstories that either you didn't remember or didn't understand because you were a kid.
Yeah, that was interesting. For me, it was interesting to see the building of the greatness of that team and losing to the Boston Celtics, but seeing Jordan go for 63. And I remember watching him go for 63 live, and I loved watching him go for 63 and reliving it again and hearing what Larry Bird had to say. Or I love the Dream Team stuff when they had that scrimmage going on. I don't know if they were in Barcelona or they were in another city, but there was a scrimmage going on. And Magic was getting all over Michael, and Magic's team was beating up on Michael's team, and all of a sudden, they woke up Jordan. And it was just, it was awesome to see. I think it was it Magic and Barkley were on one team, and Jordan was on the other team? But it was just a neat thing to see the background, and you could see you see the old footage. It's not in HD. It's not in 4K. Man, it's the old grainy stuff, and you're watching it. It was really neat to see these guys in the behind the scenes on how all this stuff worked. To me, I love that stuff. I absolutely love that stuff.
And how about the production company's doing Space Jam, and they've got to build him his own gym, like right there on the set, to where he can get basically use that time to work on his comeback. I mean, yep. I thought that was fascinating, and he's working out, and then he's shooting the movie, and then he's working out some more, and then guys are just showing up at this facility on the set, and they're just playing pickup games until 1 o'clock in the morning, and then he's
and
back
huge
up
stars
again at six. Yeah, guys are just showing up because they want to play in this thing. It's crazy.
Yeah,
and
it's
Sean
not
Bradley.
Like it's not like you and hey, Sean Bradley was awesome, 7'6", wore number 76 on the 76ers, my friend. I used to walk through the airports with Sean Bradley and Manute Bol. It would be the three of us walking in airports because at the time we were flying commercial. So,
what it tells you about Sean Bradley? The fact that he was allowed to play in that shows that he was a little bit more deserves a little bit more respect there, Langford.
Yeah, exactly, my man.
Space Jam. I mean, you just have to be able to participate in those scrimmages. He was there by default.
It was hilarious, but it was pretty cool to see all the big names of guys who were showing. Again, it wasn't open gym, and they had randos coming in and playing against Jordan and his boys. It was big-time stuff.
It was like all-star games and Sean Bradley.
Oh, look at
Call
you guys.
Call your own fouls, too. No refs on the court like the Dream Team practices. It was straight-up pickup game.
Love that stuff. All right, what's coming up on the game is brought to you by the California Highway Patrol Motorcycle Safety Program. We're going to do something, and Stephen, can we get you involved in this? Can we do something called Start, Bench, or Cut when we continue? Is that okay with you?
That's doable.
I think I want to do that. We're going to do that when we continue. As we all start to get back on the road again, now is the perfect time to think about taking a California Motorcyclist Safety Course. The course allows you to skip the riding skills test at the DMV and is required for riders under the age of 21. Become a better rider. Learn more at CaliforniaMotorcyclist.com, CaliforniaMotorcyclist.com. It is gorgeous outside. If you've ever wanted to learn to ride the motorcycle, if you've ever wanted to go on a motorcycle trip, if you've ever wanted to be that guy, this is the time, or woman, that now is the time to do it. Thank you to the California Highway Patrol Motorcycle Safety Program. Joe Lowendibs, the name of the program. Jim Cozumore, John Dickinson, in with you right here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowendibs with Jim Cozumore.
Well, I think you start with Justin Tucker, best kicker in the game. A great opera singer, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
And rapper.
You had to one-up me.
On 95.7 The Game.
Those were the days. Joe Lowendibs off today. Welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free arts. Joe ad-libs here usually. I don't have the great ad-lib skills that a Joe Fortenbaugh does, so I'm not going to even try that. But I will tell you, it's brought to you by O'Donnell Financial Group. Survive before you can thrive. Call the O'Donnell Financial Group today and let them help you thrive. Joe Lowendibs off. Jim Cozumore, John Dickinson in. And sad news to get this segment started. I hate to do this, JD, but sad news to get the segment started from another Woj bomb, and this is just a very sad one. Do you have it in front of you?
I do, yeah. The Utah Jazz actually put out the announcement, and everybody's been just reacting to that. But yeah, Jerry Sloan passing away at the age of 78. He had Parkinson's. And yeah, the Jazz saying that Jerry Sloan earlier this morning, complications from Parkinson's disease and Lewy body dementia at the age of 78. Jerry Sloan will always be synonymous with the Utah Jazz. He will forever be a part of the Jazz organization. And we join his family, friends, and fans in mourning his loss. We are so thankful for what he accomplished here in Utah and the decades of dedication, loyalty, and tenacity he brought to our franchise, that part of the press release from the Utah Jazz. So sad stuff there. One of the greats. I mean, just a legend in the coaching realm. And we've seen, obviously, with the last dance the last couple of weeks and the battles that he had coaching against those Jordan Bulls in back-to-back finals. And he was a great player for the Bulls in his day as well.
One of the toughest, baddest dudes that made up a backcourt of Jerry Sloan and Norm Van Leer. I used to do a radio show with Norm Van Leer. Jerry Sloan, a decent human being and a great guy, really led those tough, tough Utah Jazz teams, as you point out. Couldn't get over the hump against the Chicago Bulls. There are those, as tough as Stockton Malone were, there are those who would tell you they would still pick Jerry Sloan if there was going to be a fight in the Jazz locker room. They would put their money on Jerry Sloan. He was that tough of a cat when he was doing that. I'll give you my quick Jerry Sloan story, because I used to work with his daughter, Kathy, in the league called the CBA. It was up in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Before that, I was at a sportscaster camp, and we were doing NBA Summer League games into tape recorders. And I was not scheduled to do this one game, but instead of going to dinner that one night, I wanted to announce an extra game. So I went to this court, and I was doing, I think it was Pistons-Pacers. And I was by myself with my little recorder, and I'm announcing the game. And as the game's going on, I eventually, seats start to fill in, and I sense someone sitting next to me, and I'm like, oh man, this is gonna. You know how it is, JD, when you're young and you're trying to announce, but there are people near you. You kind of feel self conscious. So I was feeling self conscious, but I want to get a good tape. So I'm announcing the game as hard as I could, and then there's a timeout, natural timeout in the action. And I think, God, well, I better introduce myself and explain what I'm doing to this guy, because I don't want to ruin it for him. Because there are scouts all over the place. You know, it's the NBA Summer League, that version of it back in the mid-'80s, late-'80s. And I turn around and I introduce myself to this guy, say, hi, my name's Jim Cozumar. I'm with the Sportscasters Camp. I said, I'm sorry. I said, but if I'm bothering you and you're trying to scout, I don't have to do this. And he goes, oh, Jim, nice to meet you. My name's Jerry Sloan. I'm the head coach of the Utah Jazz. And it hit me like a ton. I was like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. I'm sitting next to a guy I used to watch when I was a tiny little kid, and now he's the head coach of the Jazz, and I'm doing a game next to him. He goes, no, we're actually kind of enjoying what you're doing. What would you like to do? And I said, well, I'd like to be an NBA announcer one day, but I'm hoping to get a job in the CBA. He goes, really? He goes, meet my friend, Ron Ecker. He's the president of the Lacrosse Catbirds of the CBA. And the next thing you knew, I got a job with the Lacrosse Catbirds of the CBA. And right now in front of me is my official Lacrosse Catbirds basketball that I still have in my office to this day. So that's my Jerry Sloan story, that he connected me to a guy that got me into the CBA, which eventually got me to the Golden State Warriors, because I moved to work in San Jose and I worked for the Golden State Warriors. So my long-winded Jerry Sloan story. I told you it was a quick story. It was a long story. But Jerry Sloan always holds a dear place in my heart, and it's very, very sad at his passing. And so that's a sad day for the NBA. But, wow, what a great era the NBA was at that time, with the Stockton Malone team, as disciplined as they were. And I can still see Jerry Sloan on the sidelines, JD, just standing there on the sidelines. He was always stoic, or he would argue with some people. But it was really, man, those bring back some great, great memories, I'll tell you.
That's a terrific story, and yeah, the Jazz teams, I mean, they took on his personality. Yeah, it was Stockton and Malone, but they were just tough as nails, borderline dirty, ready to mix it up with you. I mean, all of the way that they played were just emblematic of him. I'll tell you one quick Jerry Sloan story. We were actually in the same bar one night
nice. In
Sacramento, believe it or not. And here I'm in my 20s, and he was, what, in his 60s, I guess, at the time, and coaching the Jazz, and they were in town to play the Kings. And there was I'm at this bar with a couple of buddies, and he's out with one of the broadcasters, actually, and another assistant coach.
Was it Hot Rod Hundley? Was he hanging out with Hot Rod Hundley?
No, it was Bowler Jack.
Okay. He was out with Bowler. All righty, I got you.
And so I guess him and Rudy Tomjanovich both went to this one bar in Sacramento, kind of a dirty bar, you know, but good drinking bar. And I was there with a couple of.
I might have been.
Yeah, there was the Pine Cove.
Oh, I love the Cove. Love the Cove. Sang some karaoke there in my day.
So Jerry Sloan, you know, there, and you know, apparently he would go there frequently when the Jazz would be in town to take on the Kings. So a good drinking man, a good working man. Yeah. And I remember, you know, meeting him that night, just kind of, you know, just brief, didn't want to bother him, obviously, but with a couple of my buddies in the 20s, just, hey, you know, hey, nice to meet you. He was very nice. Everybody's very nice. It was just, but yeah, kind of cool.
You know,
kind of cool brush. And then a couple years. Yeah, exactly. He would always have the John Deere hat on, right?
Yep.
When he would do interviews.
Yep. He always had that. And he would always, in the off season, he would just ride his tractor. He would just go back to his space and ride his tractor. That's what he liked to do. He was just a common man and a decent guy. And boy, you mentioned Jerry Sloan and Rudy T. I've bellied up to a couple of bars with Rudy T in my day when I was working for the Rockets. He was a good man. Oh, he is a good man. That's back in his drinking days. He's off the hooch now. So
right.
Good on you, Rudy T. Good on you. That's a cool story, though, that you're a kid and you're sitting there and here comes Jerry Sloan into the Pine Cove.
Yeah, and I was working, and I was just starting out, but I wasn't covering games or anything. I was board op and producing your show, board op in your show at the time.
Sure.
And then yeah, I'll never forget once I was covering games in Sacramento, the other Jerry Sloan story that we can tell parts of it on air. He had the most profanity-laced address to his team that I have ever seen during a timeout. This was, you know, mid-2000s. It was before he retired, and he called a timeout, and it was the most, like I said, the most just bluntly and I mean, he was saying curse words that I had never heard before, and I was about 26, 27, and haven't heard since. I mean,
it was nice.
Yeah,
he invented some swears. He did. He was good with the swears. He was a, and to him, he wasn't bad mouthing or intimidating you. That's the way he communicated.
And not offensive, just cursing. Like, it wasn't like it was, you know, I'm not saying it was derogatory towards anybody or anything like that. And I'm not making light of that. I know, I feel like in today's day and age, it's like you have to say that. It was just a guy on a cursing tirade. And it was funny.
You know what? And I agree with you, but that guy couldn't coach today. And you know what? That guy actually was changed. Remember when Darren was a who's the guy who came from Illinois? Darren Williams essentially pushed Jerry Sloan out when Darren Williams wouldn't act and react the way Jerry Sloan wanted, when he wouldn't show up, you know, to what Jerry Sloan thought was the way you were supposed to show up and be ready to go. Sloan just picked up his sneakers and he said, "I'm done." He grabbed his whistle and said, "I'm out." And that was kind of the beginning. And remember, Darren Williams came in when Chris Paul came in. Wasn't that the same draft?
Yes.
Your memory, man. That was the same draft, wasn't it?
Yeah. 2005, right?
Yeah. And they chose Darren Williams over Chris Paul. I think that's how it went. And that was going to be the next round of Stockton Malone. And Darren Williams wasn't having any of it. And Jerry Sloan finally said, "I'm done with it." And boy, but yeah, I could not imagine coaches of that era coming into today's game. I don't know how guys would respond to coaches like that in today's game.
And to your point, that tirade was in that time period. It was in that time period when Darren Williams was on the team. It was very much one of those you bleepity bleep 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 bleepers are trying to bleep and get me fired was basically what it was the gist of it. But there was about 20 cuss words that I and about five of them I'd never even heard before that were mixed into there during a timeout in a game. Again, this was maybe like the year that he did retire or the year before he retired. I mean, it was toward the end for sure. But those are my two. You got a great story. I got two very fond memories of one about seeing him and meeting him in a bar, and the other one about a expletive laced tirade when I had the pleasure of sitting right by their bench. You know that spot, you know, right in Sacramento, right behind the visitors' bench, off to the side, where from time to time you get to sit. I didn't sit there all the time, but when you did get to sit there, boy, you got to hear some things that you never heard before.
That was one of the great media seats in the NBA. But Jerry Sloan passes away at the age of 78 years old. Sad story. Our thoughts and prayers go to the family. All right, we continue here on Joe Lowen Dibs. John Dickinson, Jim Cosimore in with you. Now, Steven, who does a brilliant job, man in the steals. Is that what they say, Steven? They say man in the steals. Is that what you kids call it?
Sure.
All righty.
That's what we'll call it now. Man
you
in
and
the
my
steals.
Man, you and my man John Curley have come up with start, bench, or cut. Explain what this is, my friend.
So start, bench, or cut is just a version of that one game that we've all played before. I'm not going to mention the words to it. You can all just guess that one for yourselves. But pretty much I'm going to give you a list of three NBA players, and you're going to decide whether you want to start one, bench one, and cut one, which one you want to do with each. So we understand that?
All righty.
Yeah.
I think I got it. JD, are you ready?
You got to pick one. You got to pick start, bench, or cut among the three. You got to. There's no can't do it. You got to pick.
And of course, you can feel free to suggest any other players that might go along with this triplet that would fit better, because I did make this list all by myself. Curly didn't do any of the work.
So don't even throw his name into this.
And I can be a man about it and say that there are mistakes in here, or there could be mistakes in here. So if you have any other player suggestions, feel free to suggest.
Man up. Stand behind your choices.
We ready?
Okay?
We ready?
I'm ready.
All
Do we
right.
have some cool theme music for this?
We got a little music. Take it, AC/DC.
All right. I thought we'd go Sweet Georgia Brown.
Nah, Sweet Georgia Brown. The music recommendations sometimes that you make for this show, Coz.
Hey, we got to play my Friday song.
Oh, that's okay. This is start, bench, cut for now, Coz.
All right,
Friday song.
Let's do it.
This is hard. I'm having some flashbacks of being the Stephen Langford role on a Coz showgram.
Yeah, did he ever tell you during the holidays to play the most depressing Christmas song that there is out there?
That is one of the greatest songs of all time, though.
We
agree on that.
Yes, really? Exactly.
You picked the wrong rabbit hole to go down, brother. Coz and I are united on that. That is the greatest song of all time.
It is fantastic.
Which one is it again, Coz?
Do They Know It's Christmas Time at All?
Yeah, okay.
It is the most depressing song on the planet for the most important holiday going.
Hey, it's Christmas Eve. Let's play that one.
Oh, my God. I love it.
All right,
we've got to play that on a loop. I want that next Christmas when I'm filling in for Jolo and Dibs. I want it on a loop like your AC/DC is playing right now.
All right, we can make that happen. All right, start, bench, cut. All right, your first triplet of players. Larry Bird, Kobe Bryant, and Tim Duncan. You got to start one, you got to bench one, and you got to cut one. Which one you going with, guys?
JD.
Larry Bird, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan. JD, you can start.
I am starting Larry Bird. I am putting Kobe Bryant coming off my bench. And I'm cutting Tim Duncan. I need a more versatile player in today's game, so I'm taking Bird and Kobe. Those two are on my team, but Kobe gets benched for Larry Legend. And Tim Duncan, sorry, you're cut, pal.
Tim Duncan, the big fundamental, going to the bench. Coz, what about you?
Yeah, Bobby Banks shot. I agree with JD on this one. Larry Bird will always win, so he gets the start. Kobe will slash your throat. he's on the bench for when Bird is a little tired, and Bobby Bankshot, you're out there looking for a new gig. Sorry, I'm anti-fundamentals in this group of three. In this group of three,
really, you want a little more flash and flavor with your with these guys? Here.
Exactly. You know what? I like flash and flavor, and people don't give Bird credit for the flash and flavor that he brought. But I am, I love all three. But if in the game that we're playing, start, bench, or cut, I'm starting Bird because he was so incredibly phenomenal at every single thing he did: rebounding, passing the ball. In fact, you know what? The great Rick Barry, friend of the station. The great Rick Barry, I would say Bird and Barry are great as a great comparison. Rick Barry could do a lot of the same things, but I'm a Bird, Kobe, and then Duncan, you're out guy.
All right. Well, we've settled that one for the first
yes.
trip, but you guys agree on that one. Hopefully this next one we'll get some different answers. This next one, you got to start, bench, or cut. Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Magic Johnson. You start one, you bench one, and you cut one. Who you going with? Coz, we'll start with you on this one. Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or Magic Johnson? You got to start one, you got to bench one, you got to cut one.
That is brutal because I, in my heart of hearts, I don't think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar gets enough credit for the greatness that he brought to the game with the Skyhook. We always think... You know, you think of centers, you got Russell, you got Chamberlain. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the great Lou Alcindor, was phenomenal. But in this group, I'm starting Michael, I'm benching Magic, and I'm cutting Kareem. I can't believe it. I can't believe
what?
In this group, I'm cutting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I'm starting Michael, I'm benching Magic, and I'm cutting Lou Alcindor. J.D.?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but we agree again. I mean, Michael Jordan's the GOAT. And here's the argument for Magic Johnson over Kareem. Magic, as a rookie, played Kareem's position because Kareem was hurt and won an NBA Finals clinching game doing it. Magic, because of his size, could actually play center if need be, even at 6'9". I think it's a little bit of a recency bias in terms of this. You want versatility. You want positionless guys. Yeah. I'm finding myself leaning against the big man in today's era of big men don't mean as much.
The so NBA is all-time leading start. Scorer. Gone for both
I know.
Of you.
It's insanity. It's
it insanity.
Insanity. It is. It's insanity. I thought we were going to go MJ, Kobe, LeBron. That would have been that. That was the
That's
one.
That's a
that,
tough call.
We were, that, but
that,
then,
that
you
would
know.
Be,
Yeah, I made it.
What do you think of that one? Not to hijack you, Langford, but what do you think of that one, Coz?
Yeah.
MJ, Kobe, LeBron.
That's a tough call. That is a tough call. You are looking at the three guys who were the premier guys of their eras, correct? MJ premier, maybe the greatest of all time, although I think Oscar Robertson might be chuckling a little bit about that, and Bill Russell might have a say with something like that, and Wilt. But MJ, the greatest... Kobe, after MJ, was the greatest of his era. And LeBron is, without question, the greatest of his era. I might go, MJ starts, Kobe's on the bench, and I cut LeBron James.
Well, we have our first disagreement. MJ starts. But I'm actually, I'm going to put LeBron off the bench, and I'm going to cut Kobe Bryant. As
wow.
painful as that is to do.
That is hard.
I just think LeBron, Kobe the better scorer. Kobe won more rings. LeBron is just more versatile, the better all-around player, the better defender. Not that Kobe was a bad defender, the better passer. Not that Kobe couldn't get his teammates involved. LeBron, you know, far more unselfish of a player. I gotta go LeBron over Kobe. Even though, I mean, gosh, Kobe has just the tenacity and the championships, frankly, that LeBron doesn't necessarily have
yeah.
as consistently.
I will tell you, LeBron is the most incredible beast I have seen, and they're different players, but the most incredible beast I have seen since Shaquille O'Neal in his prime. Right. Remember when Shaquille was just unguardable, was simply unguardable. In fact, you know, they would argue, well, he gets fouled a bunch of times during the game. They just never call him because he's so big. They let him just bang away at the guy. LeBron is a beast. JD, someone sent me over some old radio calls that I used to do when I was doing backing up with the Kings, and I happened to do some Kings-Cavs games. And LeBron, even then, was such a physical specimen, and it's only increased to me. Like, when he walks on the floor, he looks otherworldly, doesn't he? He looks like everyone else. Yes. Looks like an NBA player, and then there's LeBron James, and you go, that's different. That's just
different. Yeah, he looks like a defensive end. I mean,
God. Chiseled. Yeah, he's just
no
amazing.
Doubt.
He's an incredible beast. But I think Kobe is more of a cold-blooded killer than LeBron is a cold-blooded killer. That's
I'm with
my
you on
view
that.
Of it.
No, I'm with you on that. I just think LeBron's a better all-around player, can do more for you.
Okay.
So I'm keeping him around. And again, we're talking about the greats of the great, but I'm put me in the LeBron over Kobe camp.
That's fair.
Did you guys see any of the tweets during this Last Dance documentary when they're saying there's no way that LeBron can be over Michael Jordan when LeBron does this? Then they'll post a video of like LeBron just missing a layup, choosing the one low light of his career to just compare to Michael Jordan. People were just trying to disparage him any way they can during this entire thing for the past 5 weeks.
That's why, Stephen, I'm advocating for us to shut off the internet. I think that if we just turned off the internet and all social media and all Wi-Fi, I think we'd be better as a humanity. So when people
but not
do
until
that,
after shelter in place is over.
Maybe during. Maybe it needs now more than ever to be shut off. But I'm an advocate for shutting off all things internet related. So
I'm going to start a new trend. I'm going to put a YouTube channel just showing every superstar's lowlights. There's no highlights anymore. It's just going to be all of their worst plays in their career. But we do have to move on, fellas.
Yes, we do
have to move on to the next one. All right, start, bench, or cut. You got to start, bench, or cut Russell Westbrook, Luka Doncic, or Damian Lillard.
Oh, this one's brutal. This one is brutal.
Whichever one of you guys want to go first.
JD, you want to go?
Started, but JD,
I'll
go
first. Okay. I'm going to start. I'm starting Damian Lillard. I am bringing off the bench Luka Doncic, and I'm going to cut Russell Westbrook. I think Russell Westbrook's a little bit on the downturn, just a little bit. Luka on the uptick. I want him backing up Dame Dalla, who is maybe my favorite player in the NBA just in terms of watchability. I love watching Damian Lillard. I think he's entertaining as all heck.
I will tell you this. Damian Lillard is one of my watchability guys. And in the Eastern Conference, Bradley Beal is my other watchability guy. Like, I love watching those two guys who are playing for teams that are so-so, if not underperforming teams. I love watching that. But, JD, I am going to say my starter is Luka Doncic. I've seen the future of the NBA, and that future is the picture of Luka Doncic. Luka's the starter. Dame Dalla coming off the bench. Russ West, bye-bye. Bye-bye. You get the slice. You get the slice in the hamstring, and you're going to be slicing everything.
You guys don't want the classic Westbrook isolation pull up from deep in the mid-range, then missing a long two?
Hey, look. I may not be keeping him on my team, but I don't need the Westbrook slander either. Like, he may not make my team, but I'm not going to slander the guy on the way out the door. And you know what? For what it's worth, I think Russell Westbrook is one of the most entertaining freaking players to watch.
Agreed. No doubt.
In the
actually.
NBA,
absolutely
too. Just for the snarl and everything.
Yeah.
Like, he is just unabashed. Like, he will do that and take that shot and make that play that you mentioned, Steven. And then, you know what? He'll do it again, and he'll do it again, and he'll do it again because he thinks he's that good. And there's a, you know, there's something that's good about that and quality and positive about that kind of mentality.
And I'm not
By
trying
the way,
to take away from the athleticism because he is one of the most athletic players that I've seen in a very long time.
Just pointing out, we are cutting a guy who averaged a triple-double two consecutive seasons. Okay? Just pointing that out. Averaged a triple-double. The only other guy to do that was Oscar Robertson. for crying out loud. And didn't Wilt do it once? I think Wilt averaged a triple-double once. But
right.
That's where we are. And I agree with you, J.D. I will not agree to the slander, although it's easy to do. He is entertaining walking into the facility with his crazy outfits. But Russell Westbrook is a watchable guy.
You know what he is for me? There are a few NBA players that make me laugh. And I mean in a good way. Not like I'm making fun of them, but it just like watching a game, you don't laugh a lot. But like he will do things, you know, mad dog his way to the rim for a layup and then snarl at a guy. You know, and I'll just kind of laugh like, whoa, dude, like where did that come from? So from an entertainment standpoint, he evokes an emotion just as an observer of the game that not a lot of other players can bring out. So I think he gets a nod, even though I'm cutting him, he gets a nod for me for that watchability and entertainment.
Steven, can I point out that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station?
Yeah, I was actually going to do that just now, but you can do that. Feel free. Good job.
All righty.
I appreciate that, cuz.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.